We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. Joining me, as always, over there in Chicagoland, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how you doing?
I'm pretty good, Ty, and I know you're probably going to answer this question with like a Simone Biles, a Gabby Douglas, a Shawn Johnson, but I want to get even more specific about greatest American gymnasts.
Okay.
How many of 1996's Magnificent Seven gold-winning American women's gymnastic squad can you name?
Okay. So that was 96. That was the Atlanta Olympics, right?
That's correct. Yep. Uh-huh.
So was that the Carrie Strug? That
Carrie Strug was one of them.
Shannon Miller, Dominic Moshi. I can't say her name. You know
Mosianu.
I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Another Dominic.
Dominique Dawes. Do we say you
Dominique
said her.
Dawes? I think that's good. You did. I'm seeing you said Miller, Dawes, Strug, Mosianu.
Yep.
Those are the heavyweights in terms of fame. And you remember the coach's name, of course.
Yeah, that was, oh gosh.
You sing the mustache, the grayish
hair. Yeah. What's his name? Tell me his name.
Bella Caroli.
Bella Caroli, that's it. Right, gotcha.
So just out and out, amazing squad. But with an injured ankle, tie and the Russians looming, it came down to Carrie Strug, right?
That is correct, on the vault.
Big dramatic, I believe vault is correct. What did she have to do in order to secure the gold after she went up in the air, Ty?
She had to stick the landing.
Stick the landing Saturday,
Ty. I think that's right. I love that. Oh, I love that. It's so good.
The landing Saturday. Tucson, Arizona's pride and joy, Carrie Strug, nailed it. I hope she has not gone on to do something terrible for humanity. I have not dug deep. But stick the landing Saturday, because across the board, especially as we look at conference championship games, we have Notre Dame looking as strong as they have in recent memory, beating Clemson at home, looking dominant in that fourth quarter against North Carolina. But it's all for naught, perhaps, if they can't stick the landing. USC.
Stick the landing. You gotta stick the landing.
5-0. Have they gotten to 5-0 in pretty fashion?
Nope.
They have not. But they can stick a landing by winning the Pac-12. Absolutely they can. Oklahoma, slow start. Spencer Rattler got better. The return of a couple key players from suspension looked far stronger than they did early on, including that loss to Iowa State. What can they do by winning the Big 12?
They can stick the landing, Dan, as I think where you're going with this.
They can stick that landing. Clemson, yeah. COVID issues, loss of Trevor Lawrence. Sure, they lose at Notre Dame. They come on strong. They demolish Pitt. They beat Virginia Tech eventually. all for naught if they lose twice and perhaps don't make the playoffs. What do they need to do?
They got to stick the landing, Dan. That's what they have to do. They have to stick the
landing. Alabama, only one scare. Defense gets better. They look like the most complete team in America by a long shot. But you lose to Florida and you lose the SEC. What don't you do, Ty?
I mean, I think they're going to beat Florida, but they can at least half stick the landing and they'll be fine.
If they lose, I don't know if they're fine. I mean, they might be.
Well.
But they're not sticking the landing. That's for sure.
Look, we've got countless games to get through here. It is conference championship week, which, believe it or not, we made it 16 weeks into this college football season. We made
it this
far.
I have 14 more stick the landing comparisons.
Look, it's still weird, even though it's the last week of the year. We'll talk about the Pac-12 game, how that's sort of falling off the back of a truck, at least for one team.
Yeah.
We've got news of hirings and firings and transfer portals and yet more games being called off. Even ones that aren't conference championship games. Remember, they're playing some straggler games this week just to get in a full season or as close to that as possible for schools that didn't qualify. A lot to discuss here in what amounts to our final regular season conference championship preview episode of 2020, if you can believe that, Dan.
I never say never, Ty, because something is bound to be postponed until some sort of, we're going to play February 14th. We're going to do a Valentine's Day special of Michigan State, Maryland. Like, it's everything's constantly on the table. But yes, I cannot believe we are finally here.
Let's do our news. So, in case you haven't seen, they are starting to announce bowl matchups. We're not going to go through all of those, but wanted to remind folks, playwinterwonders.com, that is our specialized bowl pool, bowl pick'em, bowl fantasy things contest that we are running over on our Patreon. If you go to playwinterwonders.com, you get all the info you need right there to sign up. If you don't want to go that route, we also do have the plain old-fashioned boring confidence pool that we're going to run courtesy of ESPN.com.
It's not as exciting. Time every year.
I'm excited about it.
Oh, I'm excited too, but Play Winter Wonders, that's where the secret juice
is. That's where the secret madness is at.
Yeah.
We've got all sorts of stuff going on this bowl season. We will continue to post it out on our Twitter, all of our social media channels, and of course on our website at solidverbal.com, as well as the newsletter of intent if you're on the newsletter mailing list. But keep your eyes and ears peeled for that contest and get in on the fun before it is too late. Now, where do we want to start here? Do we want to start with Gus Malzahn finally getting fired?
I think we should. Yeah, probably.
This was kind of the big story in college football outside of guys entering the transfer portal and the Old Oak and Bucket and Vandy, Georgia and Michigan, Iowa being called off. We had some other moves in the coaching world. Tom Herman gets a vote of confidence, is retained. Justin Fuente, albeit very spent after a long and draining season for Virginia Tech, he is being retained. No such luck for Gus Malzahn, who finally met his demise at Auburn. I hesitate to say it's been a long time coming. I don't mean that per se. It's just we constantly have heard the footsteps of like the Auburn brass coming for Gus to go a different direction. Yeah. And it seems as if that finally happened. So he's owed a pretty hefty buyout from what I understand. And I've heard some interesting names being tossed about. But what are your thoughts on this? How do you feel?
Huge job. Comes with a number of unique challenges, both on the football field and just within that school and the infrastructure of that program. There's a lot of influence wielded by boosters. And as soon as a new coach is named, he will be on the hot seat. That's just how it works at Auburn. So it's an enormous job with huge resources and a recent history of high levels of success. They won the national championship a decade ago. They reached it again. They've had some sensational players, big NFL draft picks, but tough job. And, you know, I saw a lot of early steam around Mario Cristobal. That seems to have cooled down as he is negotiating his own extension at Oregon. but certainly with ties to the SEC West, given his time at Alabama. And then late in the afternoon, mid-afternoon, Central time, I saw a lot of Kevin Steele steam.
Yeah, okay.
The defensive coordinator, who a number of people will remember for his absolutely disastrous run as a head coach at Baylor and largely amazing run as defensive coordinator at Auburn, with stops, you know, recently all over the South, especially the SEC, Alabama, LSU, Clemson, what have you. So that seems to be where some of the booster faction is throwing their weight. There are certainly huge names, medium names that have been thrown around. Those are the ones that have commanded the most attention that I've seen recently. You know, you're always going to have Matt Campbell and Billy Napier and all sorts of names throughout the country, because Auburn, you're going to get paid a lot of money to coach Auburn football. It's a retirement plan if it works or if it doesn't. So I can't wait to see who gets named coach. And if it's Kevin Steele, obviously the analog is Ed Orgeron, in that a hire from within with previous lack of success as a head coach, to put it mildly, with Kevin Steele, who has certainly garnered well wishes from within the program and broader booster base. So I don't know. It's a wild search. I imagine it should be done soon. I mean, we have early signing day tomorrow. We're recording this Tuesday. So today, if you're listening to this when the show comes out, but I don't think that's going to be a huge factor, right? This is a years long thought process, not just a who can we bring in to save this year's class. But that's the headline job opening by a considerable margin at the time we're recording this. What are your thoughts?
I'm curious to see which direction they go, to be honest with you, as everybody is, but it's a great job, a lot of complexities to it, not the least of which is being in the SEC West, where everybody subsequently loses their mind because Nick Saban is also in the SEC West.
Yep.
And I guess I'm particularly curious about a guy like a Matt Campbell.
For Auburn, though?
Well, that's my point. Could have his pick of the litter. I have heard his name come up in conjunction with that job, but is that the best fit for him? Does he have familiarity with the area? I think in general, that's an overrated way to approach a coaching hire. Either someone's a good coach or they're not. Familiarity with a region doesn't always mean everything, but I think I would be surprised if Matt Campbell jumped at that one. I think there are other jobs that might be better suited for him. So I'm curious to see how things go for him in particular, but not at all surprised that Auburn would finally pull the ripcord here and decide to go in a different direction, because look, we've been talking about all year, there's an element to this offense, which was really the charm of Malzahn for all those years, that just has not been
there. Malzahn offense.
Just has not been
there. Jesse Palmer, yeah.
So, okay, he's out. Lovie Smith.
Well, hold on.
Go ahead.
Hold on. I mean, other names. I mean, the Sark. I mean, the Hugh Freeze name was bandied about just because of his success within that division, but certainly his record that he leaves behind with the NCAA and off the field stuff, which I don't think is as worrisome. I think you win football games, you know, people can get over whatever, you know, victimless crime, quote unquote, off the field. But the NCAA stuff, I think, would be scary. You have Sark right there,
right?
Head coaching experience, huge offensive success. You know what I'm curious about? And this is just a guess, fully irresponsible guessing on my end. If you decide to fire a coach and he has a reportedly, what, $21 million buyout?
Yep.
And you just don't immediately like have your guy locked up. Here's the turnaround. Here's our guy.
What's the point?
This is the impressive person that we've found. Might it be more than just disappointment on the field? Do you think that there's something that's going to come out about Gus Malzahn, perhaps something within the culture of the program? Like, that to me sounds like a possibility, at least, when you're just like, we've gone far enough. We've decided, the report was they decided after the A&M game. Like, that to me, it sounds like, I know Auburn's crazy. We know all those things. That's, you know, the cliched way to look at the program. But it almost seems like there might be a fuller picture.
Well, I suppose we'll find out in due time.
Yeah.
Any other names that jump out?
Venables, Tony Elliott from Clemson, certainly every year they get their names. I saw Bruce Feldman mention them. I don't think so. At this point, I'd be surprised by Matt Campbell. I think just, I don't know. Auburn just seems like maybe a strange fit. Who knows? So, no, I think Kevin Steele seems like it might just be the answer.
All right. Elsewhere in the coaching world, we have Lovie Smith. He will not be retained. Seen some interesting names in conjunction with that one, the Lance Leipolds of the world. And
Sean Lewis, Kent
State. Sean Lewis, yeah. Kent State, sure. We've got Clark Lee taking the Vandy job. You remember Derek Mason was relieved of duty a couple weeks back. Clark Lee, current defensive coordinator at Notre Dame, going to stay DC for Notre Dame through this run through the ACC and potentially the playoff and national championship. Who knows? But Clark Lee, a Vandy guy.
From Nashville, yeah.
A lot of steam on Clark Lee wanting that Vandy job. It looks like it's going to come to fruition. So I'll hate to see him go. I think he's done a hell of a job in his time at Notre Dame. But wish him nothing but the best as he goes over to Vandy, which is a spot that he knows and loves.
Yeah, and the right coach can win in Nashville. It's all relative. We saw what James Franklin was able to do there on the field, and that was unlike anything we had really seen in the modern era with Vanderbilt football. So, you know, Derek Mason had his moments, and if Clark Lee can be, you know, Pat Fitzgerald, tough academic place, tough conference, like, seems like a huge win. And it doesn't seem like a stepping stone for him, given that he played there and he's from there. So, hope he does well.
Some other news here. We have Texas Tech firing its offensive coordinator. We've got Kentucky hiring a new offensive coordinator. And then we've got a bunch of transfer portal news. We've got Mackenzie Milton going to Florida State, DeJuan Mathis going to Temple, Charlie Brewer, Chase Bryce also entering the portal. I haven't seen anything on where they're headed. There were a few other names as well, but a lot of comings and goings here.
Yeah, they on offense, Kentucky scored 10 against Mizzou, 3 against Georgia, 3 against Bama, 10 against Florida before having a nice ride off into the sunset against South Carolina. But certainly given where that defense has been in recent years and where the offensive line, where the running back position has been, I think it's okay to say that Kentucky probably was looking for more than what they were getting recently. So hope everything works out in Lexington. I know Joe Moorhead was a name that was talked about. He had spoken to Kentucky about potentially going from Oregon to Lexington, but they end up rolling with an NFL coach and Liam Cohen. And yeah, I hope Texas Tech finds somebody because that there's enough talent in Texas. There's enough talent on that roster that was returning, that's coming in, whatever, that they should be better than there. I think they finished like 63rd in SP Plus offense. So David Yost came with Matt Wells from Utah State. He's been all over the place. Wazoo, Oregon, Mizzou. Hope Tech finds their guy. And hope DeJuan Mathis is better at quarterback than what Temple had been getting these past couple years. And I don't know, Charlie Brewer is just going to play forever. Chase Bryce is going to play forever.
Playing forever. You know it. All right. Shall we dance?
Let's do that.
Dan, time, help. I need picks of the week.
One last ride off into the sunset here. It is week 16. It is conference championship week. There are no windows of opportunity that I can see. It is potentially the best, highest level week of college football that we've had all year. A ton of good games. Hunker down. The weather may suck in your part of the world, part of the country. I think we're going to get 2 feet of snow or something crazy tomorrow.
That's
so
wild.
I'm going to be hunkered down. We've all been hunkered down anyway, but now we've got even more reason to do so. Sit inside and watch college football. And let's start on Friday. Let's start with your Pac-12 championship game. Originally, this was USC against the Washington Huskies.
Yeah.
Turns out Washington didn't have enough guys. Literally out of offensive linemen, Dan.
And at one point, I saw a story that their entire team was in quarantine.
Yeah. Obvious problem as we talk about college football games, which means that your substitute, your fallback, is the Oregon Ducks, who Dan Rubenstein famously said is not good enough to be a playoff or a Pac-12 championship caliber team. They come into this one 3-2. They're up against USC, USC 5-0, but I would note just as easily could be 3-2 with some of the games that they've won this year. USC currently a 3-point favorite. They're playing this one on Friday evening on Fox in the Coliseum. Dan, who you got?
I have the Trojans. I don't feel amazing about it. You said 3.5. That's the latest.
I got 3, but yeah, I've seen 3.
Yeah,
and
I've
a
seen
half.
3.5. Yeah. This might be your window of opportunity. Friday night, because USC games get really good at the end. Oregon games get dramatic, if not kind of sloppy at the end. So maybe you can skip the first half if you're looking for, you know, an outdoor dinner with your with your lovely partner of some kind. Man, Oregon's defense really did get a lot better against Cal. I don't know exactly what that means because Cal doesn't have players like Tyler Vaughns and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Drake London. I don't trust Oregon's offense, as spectacular as they look at times. If this game is at all close, we've seen USC rise to that occasion with Keaton Slovis, who has not, I don't think, fully met expectations. It's a lot of underneath stuff for USC. Defensively, USC has interesting pieces. Like, every team in the country should be drooling over Talanoa Hufanga, the safety, hard-hitting safety, playmaking safety for USC. Drake Jackson, very good. They've got players. A lot of them don't tackle running backs. And so... that's an issue that an offensive coordinator, who I still believe to be as talented and productive as Joe Moorhead, could take advantage of. You know, Oregon gets a little bit stubborn in those moments. And, you know, Tyler Shuck really looked to have a struggle bus of a time against Cal in that second half and some plays against Oregon State. I'm going to go with the home team. Thankfully, the game is in L.A. It's at the Coliseum, not in, is it still called Levi's Stadium? Whatever that just junk of a stadium is called in Santa Clara. So that's at least nice for college football, that it's in a college stadium, albeit an empty one. I'm going to go with USC here. I think they have more playmakers on offense. I worry, if I'm a Trojan fan, that a lot of these Oregon players have risen to this occasion last year, even with the guys who have opted out. That was a Justin Herbert team. And that's a difference to me. So I'm going to go with USC here. They just keep pulling things out. Oregon's another big advantage Oregon has is they've been off. They're more rested. And I think some people are claiming they've had more time to prepare, but USC always knew that playing Oregon was a possibility and Oregon was preparing for Washington last week. But yeah, certainly that time off favors Oregon. So I see it as being close, but I've seen how both of these teams have finished games and USC has that advantage.
I'm going to go USC as well. I feel better about, I don't really feel that much better about them, to be honest with you, but I'm just going to go USC here because...
Well, okay, so...
You've
watched Oregon, you've watched USC.
I've watched both, and...
What's popped?
I am not at all convinced with Oregon's offense.
Okay.
Not at all convinced with that offense. I thought it would look better. I don't necessarily blame Joe Moorhead for that.
No, the offense has been really productive. They've been efficient. They've been productive. It's just situationally,
right,
in big
That's
moments.
That's the point. That's the point.
You know?
Yeah.
They're
that makes
a more
them
explosive
hard to
team. Yeah. No, they're definitely a more explosive team than USC. USC has struggled to run the ball. Oregon has run the ball pretty well, impressively. USC has struggled to go down the field even with a clear receiver advantage. Oregon has succeeded in doing that. But you're right. And I'm right. It's the situational element to
it. Here's my question about this game. USC wins. They finish 6-0.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to humor you or even myself by talking about the playoffs here or anything like that, because
I don't
think that they're going to be in that conversation, rightly or wrongly.
Right.
But 6-0 Pac-12 champion USC under the tutelage of one Clay Helton.
Yeah.
Come 2021. Contract. Even if he goes like 7-5, does that buy him another year because he's reigning Pac-12 champion?
I think it still depends on what the Trojans look like against Oregon. They got demolished last year at home, and they have an opportunity, different look Oregon team, but still a really talented and at times very strong Oregon team. If they comfortably beat Oregon and they look very good and win a New Year's Six game, yes, I think his seat will have legitimately cooled off unless... You know, you go 7-5, and Urban Meyer's like, I'm ready. Mm. And he's done.
Yeah, then
he's done.
Then he's done.
Yeah.
All right. Well, during this game, if I can figure out how, I'm still playing around, but if I could figure out how, just because I want to test it out, I fired up my old PS3, and I've been playing some NCAA 14.
Great.
Because we also do some of our, like, you know, content streamed on the internet. I'm going to try streaming some of that across the internet during this game. But I got to figure out how. I haven't quite figured out how yet.
All right, we'll get there. See. You're very smart.
If I can, I'm bringing you on. You can give us a real-time reaction.
Yes.
To the Pac-12 game. What about the Dr. Pepper game, Dan? Dr. Pepper back in the saddle for another big sponsorship here, the Big 12 championship game. They play this one at AT&T Stadium in Arlington. I haven't seen if they're doing the tuition throw. They better
That's all I actually care about.
They better not get rid of that. They better not get rid of that.
Okay, I'm looking it up right now. Continue.
The Clones, you may recall, won a matchup against Oklahoma back on October 3rd by a 37-30 score. They are your first place finisher in the Big 12 regular season at a mark of 8-2 overall. They are squaring off against the Oklahoma Sooners. Oklahoma 7-2 overall. And again, they lost to Iowa State the first time, but now they're about a 5.5-point favorite as they play this one Saturday at high noon on ABC. So if we hearken back to that matchup, a huge win, a back-and-forth game for the Clones. Breece Hall ran in a touchdown late, and then they picked off Spencer Rattler on a long throw into double coverage in the end zone with about a minute left or so, and that's what sealed the deal for Matt Campbell and Iowa State. Iowa State also beat Texas a couple weeks ago, so you want to talk about a monster season. Doesn't even matter what happens in this game. Monster season beating both Oklahoma and Texas in the same year. Big, big, big deal for Matt Campbell. Part of why he comes up in relation to jobs like Auburn. So, yeah, I talked to Bill Connolly last Friday about Iowa State and about Oklahoma. He is all in on Oklahoma being like the fifth best team in the country right now.
Okay.
And the deeper you look, the numbers are there. They've been really, really good since that Texas game in mid-October. And I'll just come back to this because I think it needs to be repeated. The Oklahoma defense has improved too. Early on, I'm making like, oh, this is a Stoopsian defense jokes. Ha ha. I'm not going to pretend the schedule didn't get easier. It did. But the numbers are good. The numbers are good. They look like they've gotten much better. I think they're dealing with like a full squad now. They had some guys who weren't playing early. That part has worked itself out. And the conflict for me is that I so badly want to pick Iowa State here because just the quality of that story and storyline and all the characters involved on the Iowa State side, it's so appealing as a college football fan. I just can't get past the fact that I think Oklahoma's a better football team. And I think I have to pick Oklahoma to win. I'm just grappling with what I do in relation to the point spread.
Which, once again,
five and a half points.
Oklahoma the favorite. First game was in, it was not a monsoon, but it was rainy. And Spencer Rattler on the road actually made a few throws, more than a few throws, and had a couple of big throws dropped that could have been touchdowns or gotten the ball down to the one. Iowa State looked very good in that game, but certainly, you know, they had the long kick return, some unsustainable things to set up touchdowns. Iowa State won that game, period. They were very, very good, and it was an incredible win. And I don't know if they're wearing the all-black uniforms again. I know they're very, very good in those. Oklahoma, since the return of Ramondre Stevenson on the ground, I believe he was really good against Oklahoma State, less so against Baylor. Ronnie Perkins has been a pass-rushing terror since he has returned, both from suspension. Oklahoma has looked so much better on both sides of the ball with just, you know, those two guys returning and some more comfort in their systems and more comfort for Spencer Rattler. I think Oklahoma is the better team. I don't think Oklahoma has the killers that they've had in recent years, which I think brings these two teams closer together. I really like Iowa State on defense. They can get to the quarterback without bringing a number of dudes like they did to Spencer Rattler the first time they played. I think right now there's more to like about, and I love this matchup, the Lincoln Riley, was it John Haycock, the defensive coordinator, Haycock for Iowa State, running that unorthodox 3-3-5 that's been crazy effective and influential in college football. I think Oklahoma wins this game. I do. I think they're going to do more little things. I think they're going to, you know, catch tough third and sevens more often than they have in losses in close matchups. They're not going to get the explosion plays, but I don't think Iowa State is in the way that they did last time. I think if Breece Hall has a great game, Iowa State's winning. I'm a little bit worried that he is simply going to be good or very good, and it's not going to be enough. So I'm going with Oklahoma here with a more tested, a less green Spencer Rattler, a more complete team, and a defense that has gotten a lot better against. An Iowa State offense is not built to bomb it down the field all the time. Their All-American is Chaz Kohler, right? They throw it up to Chaz Kohler. He makes plays. He finds space in zones. He's one of the absolute best tight ends, pass catchers in the country. But I think to have a really strong chance right now against where this Oklahoma team has gotten to, I need more threats to stretch out this defense. And I don't fully see it in, you know, Xavier Hutchinson, who's sort of hot and cold at receiver. I just don't think they have that guy. So I'm going to go Oklahoma here to win 34-27.
You need more Winter Wonders is what you're saying. Play winterwonders.com.
Iowa State looking fully, I mean, they've already beaten Oklahoma. They are in the top tier of the Big 12, unquestionably.
I would agree with that. And I desperately want to pick Iowa State to win this game. I think they cover the spread. I think they're going to be up for this game. And even if Oklahoma outclasses them in the end, I still expect it to be pretty close. So I'll take points here just because I wouldn't respect myself otherwise. I do think Oklahoma is a better team. I'm curious to see what they do with a shot at redemption, essentially, against Iowa State.
Does it also feel like Brock Purdy throws 2.5 to 4 passes a game where a defender slaps their helmet because they can't believe the quarterback threw it right to him and he dropped it?
Yes.
Doesn't he feel like he's just like, he has just absolute brain farts once a half? And sometimes they get lucky and sometimes less so.
He's a wild card. He is a wild card.
Totally is.
First game around, something like 12 of 24 or a couple of those passes.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm going to say Oklahoma wins something in like the 35-31 range.
So we sort of agree.
I think so. Let's stay at high noon. Hopefully you got a 2-TV setup so you can watch this battle of Big Ten Titans, Dan. Evanston, going to be a buzz. Where are you watching the game? What are you doing for this game?
I rented out Wrigley, obviously.
Okay. Good.
No crowds, but, you know, I'm taking advantage, you know, as being a VIP in the greater Chicagoland area. I am watching this game at home, likely solo.
Big Ten championship game. They're playing it in Indy at Lucas Oil Stadium. It's on Fox at high noon. It's Northwestern. The Cats, 6-1. Ohio State, 5-0. Making it in on a technicality thanks to the Big Ten brass. They're about a 3-touchdown favorite. So let me start here. I want to frame.
They also made it in because they haven't lost a game and they're the clear best team in the conference, to be clear.
Details, Dan. I want to frame our conversation on this game right here.
Okay.
You and I both have access to a set of projections that has Ohio State winning this game 33-17.
Yeah.
Do you believe that Northwestern can score 17 points here?
Not fully. Somewhere in that range, maybe. But no, I would not. I think they can come right out and go up 7-0 with a really strong game plan and scripted opening to the game with Peyton Ramsey, who's pretty accurate. I just don't think this Northwestern team is built to hang around for a considerable amount of time. As strong as their defense is, they don't rush the passer like they have in recent years with other defenses that they've fielded. And we know how you beat Ohio State, and it's the way you beat a lot of teams. It's an ability to bomb downfield successfully. It's the ability to break arm tackles and turn 3-yard gains into 15-yard gains. And that's not how Northwestern's built to win the Big Ten West. They're not built to win the Big Ten, and that's okay, because winning the Big Ten West is a big deal. But I mean, it's the Winter Wonders thing, I guess, but they play really strong defense. But if that's all you really do, and I know they ran the ball better last week, I know Peyton Ramsey is certainly a noticeable upgrade over where they were last year at quarterback. It's hard to see it. It's hard to see them continuously going downfield methodically, because that's what their offense is built to do against this Ohio State team. So, yeah, I have it at like 35-16. So right around the spread. I'm going to take the points because I'm loyal to this new area in which I live.
Yeah. Okay.
But
sure.
Yeah, I think Justin Fields eventually makes this very comfortable for the Bucks.
Yeah. Well, look, Northwestern's a fun story. I'm glad they get to play in this game. I don't see how it's close. The Cats are the halfest half team of 2020. Their offense, 99th in the SP Plus. Their defense is second. Can they curtail?
They go three and out on offense almost 35% of the time.
Yeah. Can they curtail the Buckeyes? I don't even know if we can say that for sure. Because Ohio
I think they're going to keep them in front of them.
Well,
they're going to force Ohio State to go 9 plays, 75 yards instead of 4.
You say that, but Ohio State is such a far cry from the other teams that Northwestern's played.
It's true.
I'm not convinced of that. I'm not convinced they can stop Ohio State. I know they can't score. So if we're looking for a Tracy Chapman, that one good reason.
Or just one reason.
Or just
apparently
one reason.
It's not good reason. We were corrected.
A thing.
Who's the best quarterback that Northwestern has played this year?
Okay. So I'm looking here. Northwestern has played against Tagovailoa.
Spencer
Petras. Yeah. I almost
Patron,
said Patronus.
I like that. Continue.
either Adrian Martinez or Luke McCaffrey at Nebraska. It's hard to keep him straight.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue, no. Wisconsin. let's not talk Graham Mertz. Michigan State. No. So, I mean, and Illinois. So it's not like there's been any heavy ammo with regard to quarterback.
Right.
Which is why I'm not convinced. I remain unconvinced that Northwestern can have the same effect with their defense against Ohio State. I just don't know what the reason is. I don't know what the reason is if I'm picking Northwestern to win or even cover. I don't feel confident. I'm going to lay the points. I'm going to say Ohio State wins this one 41-13. Easy 41. Win going
That's a lot.
Away.
It's still a lot of points to score against Northwestern's defense.
But do we know
presume.
That? Again, that's my point. Maryland, Iowa, Nebraska, Purdue, Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Illinois.
Iowa. Answer is Aiden O'Connell, by the way. Aiden O'Connell is the best.
Aiden O'Connell,
statistically,
thank you.
Against Northwestern this year in a losing effort.
I'm looking at these teams. The best team here is Iowa. And it's not exactly like they're an offensive juggernaut. So, no, I'm not convinced. I do respect the Cats. I like the defense, but I just think this is a totally different class of an opponent. And so I'm saying Ohio State lays the lumber, 41-13.
Ohio State hasn't played in a little bit. They didn't play the Michigan game. They played Michigan State. They didn't play before that. They played Indiana. They didn't play before that. So they haven't played 2 weeks in a row in a while. So I maybe they're a little arrhythmic, although they perform pretty well against Michigan State. With that bye week. I think Northwestern still keeps it close enough.
Right.
I do.
We disagree.
I think they're a well-coached enough defense that, yeah, it's nice still, even though it's the championship game, that J.K. Dobbins is worth talking about as somebody who Ohio State misses.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know, kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue
when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Let's go to Saturday, 4 p.m., the big in on ABC. It is Clemson at 9-1. That one loss came via the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Notre Dame also playing in this game. It's a rematch. The Irish finished 10-0. They are a 10-point dog.
Yeah.
This one being played in Charlotte at Bank of America Stadium. So, again, another rematch. This one was 47-40 in favor of Notre Dame when they played back at the beginning of November. Went to overtime.
You'll remember, overtimes? How many overtimes did they go?
Two.
Yeah.
You'll remember that this was also the game featuring a Clemson team without a couple guys on defense. And also the first road start for true freshman DJ Uiagalelei.
You just nailed it so well, Ty. You did such a good job with that.
Stick the landing Saturday. That's where we're at.
Stick the landing Saturday.
Folks have been pointing that out to me for a while. Not sticking that landing, but
yeah.
The fact that Clemson was without some of its key contributors, most notable of which Trevor Lawrence. Like, you got to mention that, sure.
Big deal. Big deal.
How do you feel about this game? I have a sense we're going to argue here.
I think it's going to be a close game. I think Notre Dame's defense is such an impressive unit to watch, although it concerns me a little. Clark Lee, defensive coordinator, has his hand in a couple different teams right now, even though he's sticking with Notre Dame. He got signing day this week, accepting a job, and all the backslap and phone calls. All, you know, it's a different kind of game week, I would imagine, for Clark Lee. But these guys are ready. These guys, you know, his players are ready. That they have mastered this defense. They've been quite impressive. We saw what they were able to do against an offensive juggernaut in North Carolina and stymie Sam Howell in that running attack. So I'm not terribly concerned, but it's a new element to this game week for Notre Dame. I rewatched both the North Carolina and the Clemson games, and I came away pretty much equally impressed with Notre Dame's defense. Clemson's offensive playbook looked different in the Notre Dame game, understandably, with a true freshman making his first road start. I think it was a lot of sort of one read and something's either there, I'm running the ball, which is fine because he's supremely talented, DJ Uiagalelei. I am not wild about this Notre Dame offense. Relative to current expectations and what we believe their matchups could be in the next month. I think there were too many plays that Notre Dame needed, you know, a 50-50 catch from Bennett Skoronek or Javon McKinley, and they needed that. They absolutely needed the, was it Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah?
Yeah.
Who had the sort of fumble catch against Clemson in the first matchup that he ran back for a touchdown.
Right.
There are too many things about Notre Dame's offense right now. They max protect Ian Book so much and makes it really difficult for his already sort of beleaguered receiving core to me. I just were the matchup of Tommy Rees against Brent Venables with time, now that they called off the game for each of these teams going into the ACC championship game. I don't like the design of this Notre Dame offense against the sport's absolute best with time. Like, I think Ian Book is very good. I think the totality of Notre Dame's offense makes it more difficult for him to be very good. And I kind of understand why he's throwing short more than I did before, just because so much is taken away to me by the design of the offense. So I understand why they lost the way they did to Clemson in the playoff before. I get all that because I think their offense becomes more predictable. They leave in the running backs to help with pass protection instead of using them as safety valves for some free yards to make it third and three instead of a throwaway third and eight kind of thing. So I just think that's a disadvantage at this point. And Notre Dame can still make the playoff as long as they don't fully embarrass themselves in this game. So I'm going to say Clemson here. I don't think they cover, but I think they win by a touchdown. I have it at like 37-31. 34-27, similar to how I see, I said 34-27, I think Oklahoma, Iowa State. I think it's a similarly scored game as that one. I just think Notre Dame fans might be quite frustrated with the pass design in this game.
They don't
throw screens. I don't think they threw a single screen to a receiver or a running back. Maybe one in either of those games. They're like allergic to free yards. Like they prefer running in San Francisco to running on flat ground. They just make it more difficult for themselves to me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I disagree to some extent with how they've built the offense, because as a Notre Dame fan who watches all the games, I feel like they've gotten better. I feel like they've gotten better at what they are, even if what they are, in your view, makes it harder than it needs to be.
Look, they scored a touchdown against Clemson. That's better than where they were.
It is. It is. They beat Clemson. So
yeah.
Let me go back to this, though. The sticking point for me, I went back and watched the game and I looked at some of my notes. The sticking point for me last time was that I thought Clemson was going to stack the box and shut down the ground game. And that if they did that, book wasn't going to be good enough to beat them through the air. That didn't really bear itself out because Kyren Williams went off, had a 140 and 3 touchdowns. Ian Book went over 300 yards, a couple big pass plays, didn't do anything stupid. Those bigger plays have remained a thing for Clemson's defense this year. There aren't a whole lot of flaws with them, but you can get those big plays just like Notre Dame did before and just like they have to do again on Saturday if they want to win.
Yeah.
So that's there. They have to find ways. Tommy Rees has to find ways to take advantage of that. The offense has changed, I think, a little. I think the offense has gotten better since that Clemson game. I think I feel better about it. It feels like it's all kind of going and rowing together as opposed to before. I remember that Clemson game. Like, I was just wondering, where are they going to get these plays from? Now it feels like they have more threats.
They have more threats, but you watch a lot of college football that isn't Notre Dame. And you see teams running RPOs and hitting a slot receiver that goes for 37 and with nobody nearby. Like, they're schemed open. And I'm going to talk about Clemson too, because Clemson has their own deficiencies. But doesn't that stand out to you at any point? Like, when you watch, not even the best of the best, but when you watch teams who move the ball pretty well, don't you notice guys that are getting an easy 12? That in ways that Notre Dame doesn't?
Well, I mean, look, I've talked about it on the show. I'm somewhat perplexed by the fact that they still aren't really able to throw down the field that much and stretch the field. You know, it's a lot of dink and dunk stuff, a lot of underneath routes, a lot of Ian Book runs around behind the line of scrimmage until someone's sort of open or he scrambles. That's kind of the passing offense. And
I don't know.
It drives me nuts, but there comes a point in time where you just have to accept that that's what the offense is. I think legitimately that is what the offense is at this point. They don't have playmakers out wide. Chase Claypool and Miles Boykin, like, those guys are not walking through that door on Saturday.
The guys are okay.
They're like, fine.
Javon McKinley is okay.
They're
Bennett Skoronek shows up sometimes.
Michael Mayer is a monster. Kentucky Player of the Year. Like, he's a big kid. You will hear that, I promise you. But I just think it's a different kind of offense. And so I understand the frustration. Okay. I felt it. But I think it's just we have to accept that's what they are. And if we get a game like they did against Clemson the first time around, that would be a pleasant surprise.
Notre Dame didn't even play a perfect game to win, which is a good thing
that's
for
a
Notre
good
Dame,
thing.
Right?
Yeah,
it's
absolutely
a total good thing. Notre Dame didn't play a perfect game. They scored 19 points offensively until the final 20 seconds of the game and still managed to pull it out. I just think Trevor Lawrence is a difference in terms of what the offense can look like in those big moments that it didn't look like with DJ.
DJU had 439 and 2 touchdowns, no interceptions.
Totally.
And the way that Notre Dame played against this Clemson offense reminded me a lot of the old Bob Diaco defense back in 2012, where they're willing to take 439 through the air, but just don't break. Don't break. And that's sort of what they did here. They took away ETN. They got enough stops on defense. They forced a couple turnovers and they hung on. They took it to OT. They hung on. They ended up winning. Notre Dame basically needs to do the same thing if they want to win this game. I think they're good enough to do it. What worries me is how Clemson's going to adjust now. What kind of lift will Trevor Lawrence give them that we didn't see the first time around? I do not expect 3 turnovers from Clemson again. I don't expect just 28 yards for Travis Etienne. That seems like a black swan event to me. So this is going to be a better version of Clemson. How does Notre Dame adjust? Can Notre Dame adjust? I think I hate to say this, but I think the real point is the one that you mentioned at the top here. I think they're good enough to win. I don't think they will. Even if they lose, they have to keep this one close. Because if they keep it close, suddenly it's a split decision between Notre Dame and Clemson in two regular season matchups. And it gets a lot easier to say, these could be the two best teams in college football. Not saying they are. We deserve to see a third matchup.
I don't think there's anything that can happen that would lead me to say that.
Clemson wins 42-31 and covers.
Yeah, but you can't be trusted.
I can't be trusted.
In terms of picking with Notre Dame games.
I can't be trusted.
Because you just pick against Notre Dame because you're afraid of being confident. I'm worried about Clemson's defense. I don't think they rush the passer as well. Obviously, they've been without key guys. I don't think they have the absolute stud on defense that they've had in recent years, or studs. Who was it last year? Kendall Joseph, who was just all over the place for the Tigers.
Right.
Literally played like seven different positions on this defense. So that worries me that they just don't have the stud factor on defense. Their tackling hasn't been as good this year. They've let too many plays get behind their secondary, as talented as some of those guys in that secondary are. The linebackers have whiffed more than I'm used to seeing on what seems to be unwhiffable, like outside zone runs, stuff like that. There are elements that scare me about this Clemson team in terms of not playing at the level defensively or with regard to the offensive line up front on offense on a level we're used to with Clemson. And I think their receivers are good, but without Justin Ross, I don't think they're top of the top. So they're a different Clemson team. I think they're merely very, very good, not no-brainer great.
What's your final score again?
We'll call it 35-28 Clemson.
Final big matchup here, and then we'll talk through quickly some of the other group of five games. SEC title game, Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, 8 p.m., CBS. It's Alabama at 10-0, a 17-point favorite against Florida at 8-1. So, Dan, here's the simple truth in 2020. Bama's closest game was a 15-point win on the road at Ole Miss. That was the best offense they faced all year. The adjusted scoring margin in that game was 11.2. So, you know, okay. Close enough, I guess.
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
I think Florida can score points on Bama. It's all going to be on the arm of Kyle Trask, though. And it's going to need to happen via big plays. That's the one weakness, if you want to call it that, for the Bama defense. Kyle Trask needs to hit a bunch of those, and they got to win in a shootout. It's the only way this is going to go down if the Gators win. The defense is not nearly good enough to stop Alabama. They're going to need to outscore them. I don't think they can do that. I want to believe they can.
I really do like Florida's offense. And something you didn't mention is this is probably the matchup, albeit they're not on the field at the same time, probably the two best pass catchers in the country. Kyle Pitts looks like he's playing. I saw a quote, ready to go. That's the last report I saw. He didn't play against LSU. And then obviously Devontae Smith on the other side of the ball, who also just decided to start shining in special teams last week against Arkansas with that opening quarter, punt return for a touchdown. That was just casually excellent. I like Alabama here. I do. And it's for a matchup that I don't think you fully focused on, but it's just how dangerous Alabama's front four on defense are without help in getting to the quarterback. I know Kyle Trask is a very quick, calm, poised decision maker, and he should be at relatively full strength in terms of his pass catchers. You know, Trevon Grimes has been very good, and you know, the running backs have been very good out of the backfield. And of course, Kadarius Toney has been a do-everything player, just a sensational watch every week. But I think they're going to make life very difficult. I think they're going to force him into quicker decisions than he'd like to make. I don't know how much Christian Barmore you've watched, but he's a problem, Ty. He's a winter wonder, and he's a problem. And Alabama is not going to need to blitz to get to Kyle Trask. And I like where Florida's offensive line has progressed to in the recent couple of years, these last couple of years, because they were a mess early on in the Dan Mullen time in Gainesville. But, man, that front four allows that defense to do so much. And that's been where all the improvement has started for this defense since that Ole Miss game. And so I think they're going to get Florida off the field a lot quicker than the Gators would like. And I don't know. this offense is too much. It's just too much. And the gravity that Devontae Smith commands opens things up for everywhere else. Najee Harris, John Metchie, whoever. I don't know. I have it at Alabama 40. I mean, I don't, you know, the Sark versus Todd Grantham element to this is not particularly advantageous for Florida after giving up what they did last week to LSU. I don't love the Florida secondary. I'm just going to go Bama here 45-21. Mm-hmm. I think they cover.
Yeah. I've got 45-35 Bama. I think Florida can hang on here. I don't have much faith in their defense, but I do have a lot of faith in Dan Mullen scheming away with a really good offense to score points against Alabama. I think you can score points against Bama. We've seen that.
I mean,
happen.
It could be 17-14 at halftime.
Absolutely.
And still get out of control in the second half. Yeah.
So 17 to me is just a lot. Florida's a good team. They do have their own deficiencies, but 17's a lot in a big game. So I'm going to go with my gut instinct here. Take Florida plus the 17.
Alabama 80% or fifth in the nation against the spread. Florida 76th in the nation at 44% winning percentage versus the spread.
Let's move quickly, Dan, through some other group of five championship games. Okay, just give me a quick take here. Conference USA, it's on Friday night. UAB at 5-3. Marshall at 7-1. Marshall is a 5.5 point favorite here. I looked this one up because I just wanted to know more about the matchup. This is like a dead even matchup here. So
it's in Huntington, right? Marshall's hosting this game.
Marshall's hosting. Yeah.
I like Marshall. I like the home team. It's two teams who have struggled on offense and look really strong on defense. The Marshall 20-0 loss to Rice aside, I don't think they've given up 20. I don't think they had given up 20 before that game. So I'm going to go with Grant Jones and Marshall here. They're at home, and maybe it was a roster thing. Maybe it was just an off week, but yeah, I'm going to go with the home team here.
We've got the MAC championship game, Ford Field, also on Friday. It is Ball State at 5-1, Buffalo at 5-0, a 2-touchdown favorite. My boy Lance Leipold, Dan.
Yep.
Dude won 6 natties at Wisconsin Whitewater. Meanwhile, Ball State, 1.5 of those 5 wins wasn't by the skin of their teeth.
Sure.
So give me Buffalo minus the number.
Ball State can't stop the run. Buffalo always destroys teams on the ground with Jared Patterson. Yeah, I'm going to go Buffalo here, I think comfortably, by 17.
Let's go to Saturday. It's the Sun Belt Fun Belt championship game in Brooks Stadium in Conway. You know what that means. Coastal Carolina at 10-0, a 4-point favorite. This is the rematch everyone's been waiting for against Louisiana. They played earlier in the year. Coastal beat them by 3, 30-27. Louisiana now coming back for redemption.
Louisiana just got done a couple weeks ago. They beat App State on the road in Boone.
They've beaten some good teams this year. They beat UAB, App State, potential Big 12 champion Iowa State in week one.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is that Coastal's really humming. They are humming. If you're 1.5 into this one and Louisiana is able to run the ball effectively, they're going to win the game. That's my tell. If not, let's go Shants.
Even though I doubted Coastal Carolina in terms of covering the spread against Troy last week, I'm not doubting the Shants, Ty. That's just not who I am as a person come mid to late December. We're talking now about a Coastal Carolina team who this year has beaten as like good a trio of G5 wins as we've seen in the country. This is an incredible, incredible season for Coastal. And I think they can win this game behind the strength of their ability to run the ball and Louisiana's own struggles tackling in the open field and in a mess of people getting lost in the wash. I'm going Shants here to win by a touchdown, 27-20.
Give me the Shants by 3, Louisiana covers.
Ah, you're
close
no fun.
Close game. Mountain West, Boise at 5-1 is a 6.5 point favorite against the real Sparty, San Jose State at 6-0 Saturday at 4:15 on Fox. San Jose has been very good all year, Dan. I know you love them.
Came back last week, yeah.
Very solid, no glaring weaknesses other than maybe their defense getting off the field on third downs, but really solid across the board. I think they've got an opportunity to hit some big plays here because that's Boise's Achilles heel. Boise gives up a ton of big plays.
Yeah.
I think it's close.
That's what happens when you have Zach Wilson on your schedule, though.
Well, correct. That is correct. I think it's close. I'm taking the Real Sparty plus 6.5.
The Real Sparty works for me too, Ty. I'm taking San Jose State. I don't know what to believe with Boise. They've played one top 60 team in the country, and they lost by 34. Granted, they didn't have a quarterback, but I would have expected them to at least get a few more stops, considering Boise and where they've been defensively. So, I'm going to go with San Jose State here. Nick Starkel, stop number 3, keeps it going, and a balanced enough team. I know Brent Brennan has had his name come up for a couple jobs, recently the Arizona one, but yeah, I don't think that's much of a distraction. Give me San Jose State to finish it out. The game is where, Ty?
Sam Boyd Stadium in Vegas.
Ooh, neutral field. Yeah, give me the Real Sparty.
And finally, we go all the way to the Tokyo Dome for this one. No, I'm kidding. Tulsa at 5-1, Cincinnati at 8-0. Cincinnati, 14-point favorite at home in Nippert Stadium, Saturday, 8 p.m. ABC, big game.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a fan of what Tulsa's done this year. It's been a good season. Been led by defense. A lot of wins where that adjusted scoring margin was better than the actual victory margin by a few points.
Mm-hmm.
I interpret that as the defense raising the floor for an offense that's had some trouble. It's a fast-paced offense. It's a variation of the veer and shoot that Phil Montgomery brought over with him from Baylor, right? They can get you when the offense is tuned up. It is not fully calibrated this year. They're going 3 and out a lot. I don't think that's a great recipe against Cincinnati. First off, because they're really sound on defense. Secondly, because they're a much better offense that's going to play at a slower pace. So Cincinnati has to be looking at this game. It's a potential playoff quarterfinal, you know.
Oh, come on.
I'm just saying, we talk scenarios on the extended recap on Sunday. If Cincy wins big, there's a chance they become the official cop-out choice of the committee in a really goofy year. There is a chance of that. So for them, it's all gas, no brakes. If they can run it up to 100, they're going to.
Cincinnati coming off of COVID issues with this very specific matchup. Yep. I believe it was last week. I don't, you know, to speculate on how that affects things is just full ignorance. So I'm going to avoid that. But that is an element to this game. You know, who do they have? Who don't they have? Tulsa was in a position to play this game. So I'm going to go with Tulsa to cover and Cincinnati to win. Tulsa just takes down Giants. Cincinnati is the clear giant of the American after edging, I guess, out UCF and just being a very strange and some would argue down year for SMU and Memphis. So I'm going to go with Tulsa to cover. Cincinnati wins this game by 7 to 10 points.
I think Cincy wins going away. I think they're trying to make a statement here, Dan.
Okay.
We disagree. Very quickly, some other games that I need to mention. Let's just go rapid fire.
The walkthroughs?
The walkthroughs. Texas A&M minus 14 versus Tennessee. We've got Florida State on the road at Wake. Wake is a 7-point favorite. Okay. Washington State plus 10.5 on the road at Utah. Any of those three games jump out at you?
Sure. Jeremy Pruitt's name is coming up for being endangered. I think Texas A&M right there with the playoff is going to look to make a statement and, you know, pick up anything that falls off of the rankings truck in front of them. So I think A&M big there makes sense to me. I think I actually like Florida State here.
Me
against
too.
Wake.
Me too.
I think I do. I think there's a little bit of momentum. I mean, granted, it was Duke, but still, there's a little bit of momentum with Florida State. I think Jordan Travis has an interesting game. Yeah. Give me the Noles in an upset here.
I think Tennessee keeps it close. I'm not convinced A&M's blowing anybody out. So
I think
Tennessee,
Utah wins going away, by the way, too. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I agree on Utah and I agree on Florida State, but I'm going to go Tennessee plus the 14 at home. Elsewhere,
wow. Okay.
We've got Mizzou minus 2 against Mississippi State. We got Ole Miss and LSU in the Magnolia Bowl. LSU favored by 1.5. We've got Illinois and Wisconsin. Wisconsin favored by 11.5 in the Paul Bunyan's Axe game. And Penn State by 15 over Illinois. I really like Penn State, minus that number. I would play my lock of the week sound, but my soundboard just died.
Okay.
I also like Wisconsin, minus the number. My first instinct was Minnesota plus 11.5, but I've been wrong on Minnesota literally all year, so I'm going to go Wisconsin. Going to go LSU minus the number, and I'm going to go Mizzou minus the number as well.
I'm just going to go the other way. I'm going to go stay at home. Stayed at home against Mizzou. I'm going to go Ole Miss to win that game against LSU in an enormous letdown spot. I'm going to go Minnesota. I don't know how many players they're going to be down against Wisconsin. I'm double-digit favorites. What have we seen from Wisconsin's offense that says they're better than anybody right now by double digits
in the
Big Ten?
Not much.
And yes, Penn State comfortably over Illinois. I'm with you.
Finally, Michigan State and Maryland. Maryland favored by 1.5. UCLA favored by 7 over Stanford. We've got Arizona State favored by 7 over Oregon State. And I didn't see, is Colorado going to get to play this week?
At the time of our recording, no. They're supposed to be available before to play in LA. So I guess if USC has a roster issue, Colorado would step in and play Oregon for the Pac-12 championship game Friday night.
Okay.
So they have to be available until Thursday or something like that to play in LA, but they're free to schedule their own game in Boulder if it's clear that they're not playing in the Pac-12 championship game. I don't know. The Pac-12 changes its rules once a day, every hour on the hour, like it's traffic. So I don't know. I'm going to go with Colorado does not play this week. Michigan-Iowa was canceled, unfortunately, for Michigan issues, which I guess have worsened since the Ohio State cancellation. I'm going to take, I guess, Michigan State. I don't know why this game is happening. Stanford-UCLA, I'm going to go with the Cardinal here. I think UCLA in a letdown spot after coming this close to taking down USC. As strong as the offense has looked, I think Stanford should be able to push around this UCLA defense. And I guess I'll go Arizona State against Oregon State, but I don't know. It feels like it's going to be close and weird.
Close and weird. All right. Well, there you go. Yeah.
Like my first school dance, Ty.
There it is. There it is. All right.
It was a time.
Look, don't forget to check out College Football Blitz over on Learfield IMG College, put on by our good friends at Learfield IMG College. You can listen on Sirius Channel 84. Or you can go on TuneIn. College Sports Now is what you want to search for. I guess the last week they're doing it this week because of, you know, obvious scheduling and where we're at with regard to the season. It is your college football red zone channel, only in audio form. They do an awesome job taking it inside the booth. As I've said time and again, my secret weapon when I'm trying to stay up to date with what's going on in college football, even when I'm out and about doing normal people stuff. So I got Dan.
All right. Well, look, anytime I can start a college football podcast talking Dominique Dawes, Mosiano, and Shannon Miller. And
it's a good.
Kerry Strug, stick good the omen. Landing Saturday. Feel good.
Stick the landing Saturday. Don't forget to call us at 408-VERBAL-1 as you're watching the games. Thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for playing along with our madness. Don't forget to check us out at playwinterwonders.com for more on our bowl contest. And in the meantime, till we talk next, for that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, this is Ty Hildebrandt. Stay solid.
Peace. It doesn't appear that the throwing tuition challenge giveaway is happening. The last tweets about it were from last year. And like it was announcing who would be throwing. And I don't know, just throw the ball underhand if it happens. Get that cash however you can.
Son of a...
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.